Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
If you're thinking, I should go for a run today, but it looks like it could rain, Sierra says save on epic rain jackets. If you're also thinking, but I can't go out in these beat-up old running shoes, Sierra says save on top brand running shoes. And if you're still thinking, but I'm also busy performing brain surgery, well, then we say, you really should have led with that. Sierra, let's get moving to your local store, like now. Go!
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
It's time to take your body care routine to the next level. Introducing Osea's bestseller body care set, the perfect companion for your summer travels. This four-piece kit transforms dry skin to silky, soft, and glowing. It features travel sizes of Osea's best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil and Body Butter, clinically proven to improve skin elasticity, along with their anti-aging body balm and Salts of the Earth body scrub. And to top it off, it's packed in a vegan leather bag, making it a must-have for all your summer adventures. Everything Osea makes is clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Treat yourself to glowing, healthy skin this summer with clean, vegan skincare and body care from Osea. Right now, you can get the Best Sellers body care set valued at $78 for 33% off. Use code SUMMER to save an additional 10%. That's an additional 10% off at oceamalibu.com, code SUMMER.
The Curse episode 8, Down and Dirty, is over, but here on post-show recap, we are just getting started. My name is Grace, but of course, I'm not alone. I'm here with Dr. Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Grace. I am just lucky to stand here in your shadow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yes. So nice. Everything you do is so good and pure.
That's right. That's right. If you could just say that louder for the camera. Yeah, for the audio. If the audio could pick that up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we didn't have the sound. My other opening joke was that we didn't send the sound guy today for the podcast, but it's almost better. Like, people will just assume we're talking about The Curse.
They'll know I'm talking about art.
It's better that way.
All right, another episode of The Curse. Sneakily, like episode 8. What happened?
I know. Is this the anti-penultimate episode of The Curse?
I believe so. Wow. Yeah, it is the anti-penultimate episode. Yeah, who is anti-penultimate? All right. Make sure we don't have a feed. We should probably have a curse feed.
I wish we did plug the feed.
I know it'd be easier to tell people to listen, but I believe we're in the Binge Show feed. What'd you make of episode 8, Down and Dirty?
I thought that this was great. I thought this was another really strong episode. I think really, really interesting. We get like pairings. We have like Whitney and Kara. We get a little bit more of them together, and then a lot of Dougie and Asher, the curse theme, and Nala and her family come back to the fore. So again, I feel like a lot of our hunches about what, you know, and I'm seeing a lot of the discussion and the discourse and elsewhere sort of saying, I'm still not really sure what the show is about, but maybe I kind of like it. Maybe I don't like it. I do feel like with a lot of what we've picked up on what some of the themes are, those threads are starting to come together as we go into the last couple of episodes. So I'm excited to talk about this.
Yeah, I'm so glad that the show is not a binge show, although we are on the binge show feed. That's because it's on Showtime or whatever. You'll figure it out. Yeah. But I love that the show is weekly. I think that it sort of deserves the type of inspection that we're doing on the show. Even the way we're recapping it by going like beat by beat. I think that like pretty much every scene, you're like, oh yeah, there's something there. There's something so intentional. I do think it's interesting that we end last episode and I was kind of like, why did she play basketball with her? And you're right. She just given her $20,000. She said this last week. It's like, yeah, she does like a little bit to a degree. It's like, yeah, I'll do it. Basically gets completely spelled out this week when she's like, sometimes you have to like be nice to people who you want to buy their art.
Yeah.
Who you hope that buy your art. And so I did really enjoy the two storylines basically here of Dougie wanting to be cursed. Asher not wanting him to be cursed, but not really doing enough to stop him. And then Whitney at the party and trying to continue to schmooze Kara. So I'm excited to dive into this one.
Yeah. Two extremely fake and instrumental relationships here.
Yeah,
And I wanted to, before we jump into the episode, Grace, did you notice that Showtime is doing a special promotion?
Whoa, I did not. What are
you
they
did
doing?
Not?
No.
This might be like a U.S. thing, but right after our last episode dropped, I saw that Showtime is giving 1 week of free Showtime.
Oh,
and they're using like the curse as like part of their hook of, you know, you can binge the curse, get your 1 week free trial now. So I wonder if like the network is really pushing this, like they're really proud of where the show is going. Like we've talked about how the critics who have watched the whole series before writing their reviews seem to be pretty high on the show, like with all of the Nathan Fielder caveats of twists and turns, and you don't quite know where it's going. But I thought that this was interesting that Showtime seems to be really forefronting the curse and encouraging people to get this free trial.
That's interesting. What's the deal? Paramount and Showtime, they've merged. Is that right? Because we do have Paramount Plus in Canada, though. Sometimes you get slightly different things just because of like rights. But it's on Paramount Plus for me. I don't think I have like Paramount Plus Showtime.
Yeah, it's not on Paramount Plus for U.S. users, although you can get a Paramount Plus Showtime add-on to get all of the Showtime content.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting. That's the show that they're pushing, which is interesting because again, I feel like the critics have been so high on it, and then the audience maybe less so. Is it still have? Let's see. Oh, and I type in Rotten. It still has a 37% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. So with a 94 critic rating. So you know.
Well, maybe Kara will explain to everybody what the curse is about, and then they'll be able to rate it properly.
Big reveal this episode is we'll talk about this later, but we find out whether or not you should have eaten the turkey. It's a big deal. I cannot believe they like spelled it out for us. Yeah. All right. Well, let's recap the episode. Down and dirty. We see these kids driving in a truck. They're going to go to the jean shop. I love this line. This kid goes, I wish I was rich. He's like, I'm not, but my parents are rich, which a spoiler alert, that means you're rich.
Yeah.
Asks if the cashier, has she done this yet? She's like, no, I thought about it. I thought maybe I'd get my sister to come and do it. They end up charging 5 to 6 pairs of jeans on the credit card.
For multiple people. It's this group of four teenagers, like high school age, maybe college, who are coming. And apparently this is like a scam that has gotten out now where people just know that you can walk out of this store with stacks of jeans and that the employee, like that the store won't do anything. And they're selling them at for a profit. Like they're turning a profit by selling these jeans on eBay. And of course it's a profit because there's zero overhead because the jeans are free for people. So this is like, of course, this is what the logical conclusion of Whitney's like misguided one woman social justice program of not having any consequences for shoplifting, that this has just become, and this isn't, you know, something that is obviously, I'm sure that there's some people in the community that have walked out with jeans, but for the most part, these are rich white kids coming in from out of town.
No, they're not rich. They're what their parents are.
I'm sorry, their parents are rich. Yeah. They just have access to as much income as they have, and all this stuff. And zero expenses. But you know, they're not rich. They're coming in from out of town and they're preying on Española. Whitney is single-handedly brought and created this situation, both by propping up the Koshaka jeans shop, which like, as we noted, is not a store that serves the local community. Like nobody in this community needs $300 jeans. Like that's not one of like the great needs of the community. So she brings this store here. It's not really a viable business model. She doesn't prosecute shoplifters. And so now we have this, this endless ring of spoiled rich kids coming in and taking jeans and selling them on the internet. Grace, this sort of reminded me of I was on Crime Scene last year.
Okay.
Yeah. Covering a show called American Pain, which was about like the opioid crisis and this these brothers who basically set up these prescription pill mills where anybody could go and get a prescription for opiate medication. And it just created this like insane, like basically trade route of people coming in from like all over the U.S. to South Florida to pick up pills and sell them elsewhere. Obviously, jeans are not as nefarious as addictive drugs.
Yeah.
But it's like this, like it's disrupting the local economy and the social ecosystem when you create something like this.
Yeah. Poor cashier who's like, no, I haven't done it yet. Like I thought about it. Maybe get my sister to come and do it.
She's like, it would be weird because I work here.
I work here. Yeah.
She's so sweet. And then like the guy also like flirts with her. And at first you're like, he's being manipulative, but I think he kind of liked her too.
Oh, I think he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So Fernando, not happy about what's happening. He shows up at Whitney's house with a gun and he claims that they were here to clean up Española. But there's all these gene thieves. And he actually thinks that they're doing this to get him in trouble. And so Whitney invites him in, just him, to talk. And I do love that where they're just like, actually, the maid that we have working, can you go into the other room? Actually, we start with the bedroom.
Yeah.
We need the living room. And she tries to explain the situation about how this is about de-escalation. Showing up with a gun is not de-escalation. Fernando is pretty stern here. He's like, no, you need to like shut up and listen. You brought a cancer to the community. But Whitney says, who are they hurting? Who is being hurt by this? He sends them out. He asks if he can use the bathroom and they say no. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, tense scene here with Fernando.
Yeah. Very tense scene. Like, so, I mean, again, like Whitney kind of took Fernando under her wing as this like idealized version of what she imagined a native Española resident would be, like not knowing anything about him, not knowing what his values are. He's a part of this militia. Yeah. And which makes Whitney very uncomfortable. And becoming like making somebody's hometown like a site for this kind of like criminal activity, like whether or not there's anybody getting hurt or whatever, it's creating this relationship where, like, again, parasitically, people who are not from the town are coming in, like they don't care, like who knows where they go next, like they're like giddy or whatever, and like they're gonna, maybe they're disrespectful, maybe they say like rude things to some of the residents. It's like, it's not good. Nobody asked for this, and Whitney single-handedly created this situation. And she gave Fernando a job as a security guard and then basically told him, but like your job is like to just do nothing, which like feels like corrupt and wrong to him. So it's like extremely disrespectful. She actually doesn't have any kind of affinity and caring for him, like as evidenced by not even letting him use their bathroom.
Yeah.
And like immediately now, once he's done, like she's over him. Like she has no... Yeah. She has no lingering concern about doing right by Fernando.
Yeah. What I like about this is, I do think there's this idea that Fernando is not, I think I have pre
preconceived notions about like what people in this community would be. And Fernando being, you know, gun owner, part of the militia, talking about there being a cancer in the community, I think is interesting because it's basically Whitney had that same idea. But once Whitney is faced with the idea that Fernando has these different belief systems, this is not what she wants. And she wants to remove this conflict in her life. She only wants things to be perfect. So I think this is a pretty interesting, thing that we've set up throughout the show here. And it's the same as like when she sells these houses and they throw out the induction stove. She's
right.
Like, well, they don't get to have a house here. And it's like, well, not really how it works with, but good try. Yeah.
But Asher was ready to take a bullet for Whitney here.
Yeah. Yeah, sure was. Yeah. She does ask, how much are we in for the jeans? $14,000.
$14,000
in jeans. I had to rewind to be like, I was like, yeah, no, I get like that many jeans. Yeah, $14,000. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I love how like Whitney deflects. She's like, I know that it's too much. Like,
but I expected more from people is what she says as well. Not her fault, this whole thing. But Asher wonders, maybe this is happening for a reason. And they decide this is the time. Perhaps they'll go get some film of the stores and then start charging them rent, which Asher basically knows. They'll leave based on what happened when they shut down filming before. But they need to get the show on the air. And then she starts mocking Asher once he says that he's worried about Fernando's mom. She uses a baby voice on him. It's quite mean.
She becomes so cruel here, like in the most like disdainful and mocking voice. She's like, oh, you're so sweet. You care about people so much. What an angel. And then she also mocks him, like trying to be the tough guy with Fernando. It's really like this whole like layer of cruelty that we've seen a little bit from Whitney before, but I think this takes it to another level. So it's like, not only in this scene does she reveal that like, okay, her intentions for bringing business to revitalize the community are completely hollow, because she's saying, okay, well, we're just going to charge rent. We're going to get rid of the businesses. We'll only use them for the show. And so she doesn't care about her promise to Fernando and making sure that he has a job. And then she also shows this exceptional cruelty towards Asher for doing exactly what she has accused him of not being able to do, which is like actually care about people and do something.
Yeah, literally last episode again, like the binge nature of the show. If you're watching a binge, she goes from being like, would you do anything at all if it wasn't for me, to directly mocking him when he's trying to do something like at least seemingly care for somebody else. The other piece I think is interesting too is there's an actual easier way to resolve this than to shut down the entire business, which is to say like, yeah, you can't put jeans on my credit card, which like maybe not easier because like people will come and think it is, and then it's a whole complicated situation. But basically, instead of going and trying to figure out a way to like be like, hey, I messed up, she's just going to like be like, no, we'll charge them rent, in which case the stores will decide to leave. And therefore, then she'll say, well, it was the stores who decided to leave. It was not,
it was not
my choice, right? So everything is a deflection. All right. So Asher, yeah, he's getting his interview because Whitney went long the day before. Mm-hmm. So he's back in. This is where he's so lucky to stand in Whitney's shadow. I really loved this scene where basically every time Asher would answer one of Dougie's questions, Dougie would like be like, no, can you do the full, can you say the full thing? Like, we need the full clip, right? Like, it's not a very good, like, you know, when you and I are very familiar with reality TV, I'm sure many of our listeners are, it's very rare to hear a producer in the show. So you do need the clips to be like,
you need the question to be embedded in the statement so that it can just be Asher's words. And I've actually taken confessionals for live reality games. No big deal. Yeah. Wow. So, but you do give them the note. It's like, you know, make sure that you put the question in your response so that the viewers can know what you're talking about. And he has to remind Asher to do this over and over again. But Dougie is like sort of very, very deliberately pushing Asher here. And sometimes, instead of just saying, can you say that as a statement or whatever, he's actually telling him to put like exact words in his mouth. Say other people do my dirty work.
Which is very funny because later we're going to see Whitney basically employ a very similar technique, linking Whitney and Dougie together. But no, it's even just kind of the condescension too. We've just come out of a scene where like Whitney is calling him a baby. And then we get the scene where it's like, he's like, oh, so like all the speakers, like how many speakers in the house? And Ash says 11. And Dougie says 11 what? It's like the most condescending way to ask him, like it's like he knows what he's, you know, it's like what you do with it. You know, it's like, may I have a sandwich?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's what I do to my nieces. Mm-hmm. You know, please, you know.
What's the magic word, Asher?
That's right. All right. Whitney calls Kit. Kara is out for lunch.
Oh, wait, I do want to point out one other thing. I noticed in this original confessional clip, and we go back to this a few times, that Dougie zooms the camera in on Asher's crotch.
Yes, that's right. Yes, he does. Yeah, just to ridicule him. I don't know.
Yeah, you have to have a feeling that he's going to use that footage with something else that Asher says in an incriminating way.
Yes, he does, because he does. We'll learn in this episode. He does know about his micro penis.
Yeah, and Asher really needs to stop telling people.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. All right. Whitney does call Kara. She's at lunch with her friend Brett. And Kara's like, "No, I'm at lunch at like this place." And Whitney's like, "Oh, that's two blocks over. I'll come." And completely misreads that Kara does not want her to come. Mm-hmm. She is with a friend, and the friend, before Whitney arrives, is like basically being like, "Oh, maybe she'll pay me for some of my wisdom."
Yeah,
knowing that this is basically like, you know, they can sort of like convince Whitney to give them money for their, you know, they know that this is all sort of a bit of a joke,
because
Whitney doesn't know actually what she wants.
She's a rich idiot, so she's a perfect mark. And like, again, we've talked about how she has this like very romanticized ideal and like very specific way that she wants to see native people like Kara. And I just love Brett is so funny. Like everything so funny. He says that's
praying
like
over his meal. So good. Yeah. Yeah. The end line is really good. So it's like when they're talking about the party and Whitney invites a Brett. This is where Kara says, like, sometimes you have to, like, you know, you have to hang out with people you don't like because they'll buy your art. And Whitney very uncomfortably laughs. So I don't know if she she's like, that's very funny. Yeah, that you have to do that with other people and not me.
Yeah, I feel like it's very, very slowly sinking in for Whitney, what Kara's putting down. But it's not until the end of this episode that I think she really gets it. Brett's prayer over his meal is, "I give thanks for this burrito that I'm about to consume. You fought the good fight to be where you are today, here on this plate. May your spirit be free as I eat your delicious body. Rest now. Enjoy your brothers and sisters in the next life."
She loves it. Whitney loves it.
She says she says that was beautiful after everything that Brett says.
So she invites Brett, and Kara says, "No, he hates these type of things." And Brett responds with, "Hate is a type of passion that often resembles love. And so he'll come." Great. Great. It's very good. It's very good. All right. Back to the questions. This is where we're going to get down and dirty. They're talking about tiling. And it does feel like Dougie's prodding Nathan here with questions that Nathan doesn't know the answer to. Whether I've been wondering your read on this. Is this, it does feel like sometimes Dougie is trying to get Asher to react. But I think also similarly to like filming his crotch, that like, is he trying to get him to say things that he can like basically, I think we've talked about this in pod before, but a Frankenbite basically being, maybe not totally the same. A Frankenbite is typically you take like multiple sentences to make a singular sentence.
Yeah.
You Frankenstein it together. Yeah. You can also just take things like if he says, "I'm getting down and dirty," he could take that and overlay it as you're saying, like probably something, he'll overlay something about Nathan having or Asher having a micro penis over filming of his crotch, all this editing. But yeah, he's trying to basically and Asher's trying to be like, "No, I have like I know how to do it. I know how to oversee people who do all this
right. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up seeing like in a later episode a cut of this confessional where we see this kind of Frankenbite technique used to make it look like Asher is saying something that he didn't. Like Dougie sort of switches back and forth between asking questions like about speakers and about tiling and like more pragmatic things to really, really personal things about Asher's relationship with Whitney and then this other relationship. And I think part of it is this technique. So he wants to keep on grilling Asher, but he knows he needs to let up on him a little bit or else he'll storm off.
But then he dives in about the ex-girlfriend and makes this joke about how Asher wanted to watch Dougie and the ex-girlfriend have sex while he watched. And it's like, yeah, he's like, I'm never telling you anything ever again. it's such a funny line from Nathan Fielder.
Yeah. Asher really shouldn't. I endorse that. Do not tell Dougie anything.
I agree.
Ever again.
It's almost like Dougie knows he needs to let the foot off the gas, but then can't like help himself. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like, he's like, as they're going and Asher isn't really giving him anything that he wants, anything useful. He is sort of like, you know, he's perfectly the most boring man ever. I think the focus groups are right. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like Dougie's like, okay, if I can't get the thing I want him to say, which is basically like, will you say like, you know, got down and dirty or explain.
I hire people to get down and dirty for me. Yeah.
Or how he got here, that he was with another girl and that's how he ended up in Española or at least in the area. Like when he's not even giving that, it's like, maybe I can get anger out of this.
Right. I think he's like trying to get anything. And I also think there's a little bit of it where Dougie it's not entirely just about the show for Dougie. I also think he wants to needle and torture Asher at this point, because like their relationship has been one of like a number of reversals where we like know, obviously when they were kids, Dougie bullied Asher quite a bit.
Yeah.
Now Asher has hired him to be a part of this and hasn't really wanted to continue their friendship. Has sort of chose Whitney, siding with Whitney over Dougie when they had disputes. So Dougie was feeling, you know, very, very injured and rejected by Asher. And now Dougie's taking the upper hand by kind of returning to that bullying stance. And interestingly, you know, I guess it works, because after all of this getting beat up on by Dougie, Asher invites Dougie to dinner.
Yeah. So cut to them at dinner. Dougie's going to go full Atkins on Monday. They just changed the name of Atkins.
Yeah. Justice for Atkins, you know? Yeah. Everybody blamed his diet, but they just changed the name. It's the least that Dougie could do is call it the Atkins diet.
It's so funny. Asher says he needed a night like this with Dougie. He never said thank you for flying across the country, and he's taken for granted that Dougie is a great friend. Dougie says, yeah, 6 months late, but yeah, okay, thank you. Then we get this, Dougie wants to order another beer, and the waitress kind of ignores him. This will come up a little bit later.
Yeah.
So they're, you know, Asher's trying to maybe make a few amends with Dougie. Seems to work to a degree.
Yeah. So do we think that Asher is doing this because he recognizes that he's sort of lost control of the project because Dougie has turned on him? Or do we think that Asher is doing this because, you know, he's recognizing like he's starting to feel lonely and isolated with Whitney pulling away and Dougie beating up on him. And maybe there's a part of him that genuinely needs a friend. Like, how much of those motivations do you think are what drives Asher?
I think it's certainly both. I think that as he's watching that, like, you know, Dougie's sort of grilling him, and it does seem like this is not like the stuff that he might have been being interviewed about before, although we didn't really see much of that. And then he's been in like basically like, you know, a fight with Whitney, yells at him, and then she mocks him. So I think he does is somebody who does need like somebody. So I think it's a mix of both. And I honestly, if I had to make, you know, one piece of the pie bigger, I would say that I think I'm very empathetic to Asher. I feel like this is like a friendship move less so than a work move.
Yeah. I also think Asher probably has like a little bit of this like abused kid psychology where, like, you know, how does he end up in a relationship with somebody like Whitney? Like, how does he recontextualize his childhood bully as his friend? It's like, I feel like it's a little bit like the Roman Roy Grace to bring
in. I was just going to say this.
Yeah. Another character that we've talked about where when, you know, somebody grows up being kind of the butt of a lot of bullying, that ends up feeling like, you know, comfortable as a form of affection, and seeing that from Dougie, he might, it might actually draw him closer to him.
Yeah.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, so Whitney's at the party. She's going to meet Marjorie. Marjorie's a little upset that a millionaire is not serving food, but luckily she made some cookies.
Yes.
Quite like this, yeah.
Yeah, I like this note. And again, to bring up Succession, this reminded me of like one of my favorite Succession lines of the fourth season is when the Roy's mother, Caroline, is you know, it's resort fare, but meager rations.
Yeah,
and
right.
I just love like the trope of rich people being really stingy with serving food.
It's very funny. So Karen, the potential buyer show up. Mm-hmm. He designed the house. Yeah, he had some help from God. If you need his number, 1-800, I am God. And then somebody else shows up. And so, they mingle.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie can sense that something's kind of off with Kara. And Kara says, no, everything will be fine. And Marjorie just, no, she's just hoping that he'll buy at least one piece of art. He's also a military contractor, though.
So funny. So, yeah. So Marjorie, I'm pretty sure, is Kara's agent. And I think we've heard Kara mention that before. So that's like that relationship. And when we see Kara and Vivi walk in and join Whitney and Marjorie, like Kara looks like very dejected.
Yeah.
And like, I guess, and I think we're going to kind of get this sense that Vivi is like maybe kind of handsy and lecherous because the other like attractive young female artist comes in and he's like, oh, finally an artist who smiles at me. Right. And we see him get like kind of very physically familiar with her. So this seems to be like a pretty high pressure situation for Kara where she needs to sell art. Like, again, this is like supposed to be some art party that shows how connected Whitney is to the art world and like how this is the circle that she runs in. And Vivi is the first note of this, but like I love how everybody is in like securities or military contractors. Like all of these rich people get their fortunes in the worst way. And this is the art world that Whitney is so desperate to be associated with.
Is Is it earlier or is it going to come up where I think it's early? I think it's in the scene with Brett at the restaurant where she's like, yeah, they need to get footage of like my personal life. Cause like I obviously have one. And then her personal life is the stage party with military contractors and artists who are trying to sell their art. Yeah. All right. So the photographer's here, he did not bring sound. So it's just B roll footage. And she says, that's great. You know, I could just cut in confessionals and everyone will know I'm discussing art. And a lot of the photographer being like, she's like, could we do some of like this sort of stuff? And he's like, yeah, I was paid for 2 hours. She's like, okay, let's go. Let's get started.
Yeah. And again, like I mentioned this up top, but the idea it's like, well, it's kind of better if they know that I'm talking about art, but they can't hear what she's saying. I love that idea. Whitney is so perfect.
So good. All right. A full chicken, Amanda, gets delivered to the table. And this time it is a Dougie prank. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Asher thinks maybe the last one was him, too. But Dougie continues to deny.
Look at me. Do you think I could hide that? So, this chicken did look really good, by the way.
It did look good. Maybe this is the exact, he picked the exact type of restaurant where you can just order a full chicken. Mm-hmm. Is that like a common, I feel like that's not super common.
That you can chicken. Lest you can, you're at a place that does like a whole rotisserie chicken, like a Boston market. I don't know, but, sometimes you see that on the menu. I guess he picked the right place. I guess it probably would have worked if they had any kind of chicken dish.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about the full chicken. I think it's funny that it's a full chicken.
Yes, I like that it's a full.
And then they take it home.
Yeah. You're like, plot hole. What restaurant could you buy a full chicken at?
All right, so we get an awkward conversation about the drinks, Amanda, where Dougie is like, I'll order more drinks. He wants to order drinks for both of them. And Ash says, no, I'm good. I'll drive. He got a text from Abshir. He's got to go fix the smoke detector. And so
Dougie says, I've had 5 beers in 2 hours. I can totally handle another one.
That's a bad thing to say, I think. But also the fact that like nobody is like, oh, that's not great. Like nobody is willing to say anything is
pretty I'll say bad that well. Officially meets the definition of binge drinking, by the way, according to the Diagnostic Statistical Manual. 5 beers in a day is like official for man is officially binge. I'm not making any judgment. I'm just
No.
But the fact that like in 2 hours is like not that much time.
No, at all. No.
Like I could see maybe if Dougie was like, I've had 5 beers in like 12 hours, you know, maybe I could accept that.
Right. No, he's had 5 drinks at dinner. So
yeah. Pretty bad. So, but like Asher is totally willing to stop drinking here. But Dougie's like, no, I'll drive. And he orders Asher a beer and a tequila.
Yeah.
Which is like, don't order that for somebody who said that they've had enough. Like that's a lot of alcohol. Yeah. And then he orders himself a Coca-Cola.
The fire or the smoke alarm is very fit. Where Asher says, "Like, guess I shouldn't have put in a used battery."
it's a perfect note.
I know.
Like, how shitty a job these people are doing. Like, how little they actually care to do. Like, it's all about the appearances of things and not about actually doing anything that's helpful.
Asher is gonna say that I maybe do believe in the curse, you know, like things have been weird since it happened, and so Dougie's gonna get up to go to the bathroom. He changes his Coke order to a rum and Coke secretly, but in the same glass.
He says it's very important you put it in the glasses. You put the regular sodas in. This is like, oh my God, this is so insane. Everything with Dougie and the drinking, it just puts me so on edge.
Feels bad. I don't like it. All right, Whitney's going to go see Brett. He goes on this like, you know, thing about artists and the first ancestors being artists.
It's really good.
Yeah. Oh,
and he's like, and Brett like dressed the part also. He's like in full kind of traditional regalia. He's like immediately, it's almost like in a video game when you activate like a non-player character. She walks up to him and he stands up.
That's right.
And he says like, I love being around artists and art. My people, the first artists who called this place home and viewed art with not only their eyes, but their souls, like a soaring eagle waiting for people and Mother Earth to view it as grace it with its wings, like the great buffalo roaming the land, enhancing the mind to view beauty in such a way that it activates the soul to believing something more than itself, the body which has it. And then Whitney just says, that was so beautiful. Can I give you a hug?
So good. As she turns around and she's like, it's so good seeing you. And he's just laughing. He's just chuckling. He's got her. It's very good.
Oh my God.
Yeah. All right. Asher is going to stop to replace the battery at the house. He is complaining about the way the text is written, that it's just a just fix. Mm-hmm. And Asher says that Dougie can drop him off and he can walk home. And this is where Dougie's going to ask for the gadget in the glove department. He's going to prove that he's good. The breathalyzer turns green. All good. All clear.
It's all good. It's only a 0.078.
Yeah.
It's like the breathalyzer is not a dare, Dougie. It's not how close can you get to the legal limit with it. And I think
also do it while you're driving, while you're already driving.
No. Yes. Great. Yeah. Wait, is 0.08 the legal limit?
Well, we'd have to look in New Mexico.
Limit for BAC in New Mexico.
Yeah, 0.08. Yeah, so he's
0.08. So he's you nailed it, Dougie. He knew. Good. He knew that yeah. It was that
Price is Right rules. You just don't want to go over.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
They're gonna go to the store. This is Dougie just pretending to buy gay porn for. I mean, not pretending. He does actually.
He does
buy
do it. Yeah.
Gay
yeah.
porn for Asher.
It's like yeah. such an adolescent like sort of behavior to be like
100%.
You know, just like oh, I'm gonna embarrass you by shouting in the store like, "Hey, Asher, get your gay porn." Like and like, you know, obviously like the kind of the toxic. Masculinity, the yeah. homophobia, like all yeah. of it. It's like Dougie's just being like a complete like teenage dipshit here. Yeah. And then he uses this to mock Asher, like by showing him these, you know, these porn penises. I love this in a way.
Yeah.
This is more problematic than what you have. A girl would never have an issue with your size.
That's right. That's right. He's like, yeah, be very friendly. What a kind compliment Dougie gives Asher. Yeah. Dougie suggests maybe we do the chicken curse on me, on him.
Oh, I do need to point out that yes. they also like they're playing this song in the car,
oh,
Hell
yes.
Yeah, by Dead Prez, which is like a rap song came out. It was in like one of the Fast and Furious movies. And it came out around 2003, which seems about right for like men of this age, like uh-huh. white men of this age. And Asher, like they both know the words, and Asher sings along and like and substitutes the N-word by saying my N-word
every time, like multiple times. Yeah. These two like rapping where like Dougie is trying to get Asher like in a better mood, and it completely works to rap along with him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they go in and Asher's worried that Dougie is gonna go try to get cursed, mm-hmm. but you know, okay, the daughter is asleep, so you know we're not gonna do, we'll just fix the fire the smoke detector and then we're good. Whitney's back at the party and there's this guy, he's a friend of Eric. Mm-hmm. Eric turns out not to be real. He's been invited by Marjorie and he buys art. There's a scene where they like go into a room that this guy has said might be an elevator. Turns out it's just a bathroom, but there is B-roll footage now
of Whitney and this man going into
in
this
and mm-hmm. out and laughing.
It's yeah. very like flirtatious yeah. looking here. This man with the head wrap who does not have a friend named Eric. Yeah, this party, like the people at this party are really just too much. But again, yeah, we're seeing all this entire party, we're seeing Whitney being shadowed by the cameraman, her very like deliberately directing him to like get certain things, follow her certain places. This particular bit of B-roll looks like it could become very incriminating.
Yeah, it's almost the fact that it's just B-roll too, I think will come back to bite Whitney potentially. So, all right. Dougie says, you know what? Normally when you switch out a smoke detector, it's good to actually to switch out all of them. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing. He always has 9 volts on him, Amanda. Always. You should always have some 9 volts.
I know. Me too. Volts. Words to live by, Dougie. Yeah.
He wouldn't want to wake up Nala, but it's okay. She's up. She stays up late. So Dougie gives the batteries, quote unquote. So Abshir, rightfully so, standing by the door watching. And Dougie's just like playing. He's like, this one's really messed up. He's like, I'm gonna need a couple more minutes. I can't hear the beeps. Could you lower the sound on the TV?
Mm-hmm.
And so then Dougie tries this wild approach of being like, you know, talking about the boy who cried wolf.
It's and, about a boy who curses a wolf.
You know, she's like, no, it's not.
I love Nala's character like that.
So good.
Yeah.
This is so awkward. I hate this. I don't like this at all.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. No, Dougie like gets kind of in her face and says, you know, my friend tells me you're pretty powerful. Do you want to curse me? I'll give you $20. And then he starts crying and says, I need this, please. I can't keep doing this. Which freaks Nala out, and she screams for her dad. And then Dougie plays it off by sort of just throwing everything.
He like jumps on the ladder and like chucks it and is like, oh, I fell. And also she was talking about the boy who cried
wolf.
It's so sinister to just be like lying to the father about what you're doing. Like, basically gaslighting
this
into being like, no, it's she's like, she doesn't know what's happening. It's not good at all. This is some of the worst behavior maybe on the show.
It's terrible. I am really glad that Abshir wasn't like killed by the chiropractor, by the way.
That's right.
I think that's the last time we saw him. So that's great news. Yeah, this is a super interesting scene for Dougie. The tears and the, I need this, I can't keep doing this. What's your interpretation of that, Grace?
So I don't think that is all an act. I think there is something there that he wants to be cursed in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, for how much he's talked about, like, it's not his fault, like, you know, that he happened to get in an accident the night that he actually was like legally drunk.
Yeah.
But it does feel like in some way he has to think that he's responsible and he needs to be punished probably in some way for what happened.
On his date, he kind of says as much. It's like, you know, at first he's like, well, how is it my fault? It was this freak accident. And then he sort of admits, well, yeah, I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
We know that like Dougie had said that he feels cursed. And that's the only way to explain what happened to his wife. But like he denied that early, you know, at dinner with Asher, when Asher brings up the curse, he says, you know, oh, you believe in that too. And like, and Dougie kind of acts like he doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, it definitely seems like there's some wish fulfillment here from Dougie, like either to die and also like the fact that he keeps on drunk driving, like that he either like what wishes it were him or wants something to either blame what happened to him on or to, you know, to be penance for his sins.
I think the more cynical read of that, which I think you could argue that Nathan Fielder and Benny Safdie would actually do this, which is, I feel like that's, you know, to a degree, there's something like empathetic about somebody who's like begging to be punished for what happened, knowing that he did wrong. The more cynical version is he needs to see if curses are real to know whether or not he was cursed and his wife died via a curse and not his own fault. He's actually looking for full confirmation.
Yeah.
That it's not his fault. That's the more cynical read of the situation, which I think actually might be as I'm like
it fits very much with the rest of the show, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, that he would be like, if she can curse me and move my chicken, that means someone could have cursed me to kill my wife, and therefore it's not my fault. And I'll just keep drinking and driving. Because on one hand, I do see some of it that, you know, he does say like I think about it all the time, but you know, that still can mean he thinks about it all the time in the sense of like, how unfortunate, how unlucky I am for that to have happened to me and not something I did myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's consistent because I do think that even if his motivation is to find confirmation that curses are real and that he shouldn't be held responsible, it's like that is covering up like the vulnerable, soft and mushy part of him that hates himself and does blame himself.
Yeah. 100%. All right. Abshir checks on Nala. You know, she says, it's not so sweet. It's like, I thought he needed help.
Yeah. He really does.
He really does. But I kind of, the one thing, like, I don't hate this. Like, I don't hate how the show's doing this. I do hate how much, like, like when Asher, like, holds the screws in his hand, the nails, and he's, like, bleeding, and she's, like, so confused, and then she's so confused here. Like, this poor little girl just needs to, like, they need to, leave her the F alone. Like,
yeah, please. They're tormenting this family. Yeah,
please leave her alone. Dougie asks Asher, isn't it exhausting always cosplaying as a good man? So this has like been like super themed through the last two episodes of like, is Asher a good person or not? And wow, Asher really stings back. He's like, ask your wife if you you're a good man. Mm-hmm. And he says, I didn't mean to say that. And Dougie very quickly is like, no, we're good. And he heads off.
They're so not good. Yeah. When Dougie drops him off, they're like, Dougie is again, like looking like he's absolutely like fighting back tears. He's like, you know, that was a fun night. We need more friends than enemies in this world. You know, Asher like leaves him with the chicken. Dougie like swats at him and then he's like, oh, it was a fly.
Yeah.
It's like the tension between these two who absolutely despise each other, but have like nobody in the world that cares about them aside from in this perverse way, maybe each other. It's so tense. And when Asher leaves the car, Dougie says, I curse you.
Bad news. Uh-oh. We'll
you
see.
You don't want to be double cursed, Grace.
Yeah, being double cursed. Well, I think technically Asher's chicken curse is over, but yeah. Do you think? Yeah.
I don't know.
No. Yeah. Is it all chicken for the rest of the time? Just gets removed from the penne?
Yeah. Is the curse only chicken related, or are these other things also part of the curse?
Yeah. All right. Karen Whitney have maybe one of my favorite scenes from the show, which is them sitting on the couch. And basically, Whitney is trying so hard to get Kara to be like, we're both artists. You know, you love having your art in the show. Mm-hmm. This is great. We're both, you know, it's a partnership. They work in, it's a collaboration. And basically, Whitney has to keep telling Kara exactly what to say, because this time they are filming audio.
Yeah.
Which I think is also something to note. In terms of the B-roll footage from earlier, that there will be audio footage for some and there won't be others.
I think it's like that they have the inborn camera, like the inborn.
Yeah, it's just not as good of quality.
It's not good. So it's like, it's not like you don't have any audio, but it's just not good enough to just have like an uninterrupted segment that's using the native audio. But this couch scene where, you know, Kara is like, and she does a really good job of kind of like giving a sullen teenager vibe who's just like, I'm not going to give you anything unless you specifically ask for it.
And she's doubly upset here because clearly the artist is not buying, or like the millionaire is not buying her art. So it's like this, like she's like come to this party not because she wants to hang out with Whitney, because she wants someone to buy her friggin' art.
And not because she wants to be a prop in something that's going to make Whitney rich, which is essentially how Whitney is using her.
Right. The scene of basically just like, okay, repeat after me, is very well done.
And what Whitney says is like, what she wants her to say is, my homes are so unique and so important as a piece of art, and I couldn't be more happy to have my work displayed inside. And like, so, and then Kara kind of repeats that in a very rote mechanical way. And then Whit's like, that is so sweet. But I see it as a collaboration because we're both saying such similar things.
The interesting piece here, too, is in the previously on, we get the piece about how she stole the homes, the home design.
From Doug Aiken,
So it doesn't really come up this episode in terms of that, but it feels like they are at least trying to keep that in our brain. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of a way in which, like, either just to cement, like, we have to remember that like Whitney maybe not be quite the artist she's implying she is because she's stolen the home design. But also this might be a reason why. And it's specifically a scene with Kara who's responding to the fact that it's Doug's art. Also her being reluctant to basically say like, yeah, your home is art, you know, but she does say it. So Whitney talks about the TV performance and she wants to know, were we supposed to eat the turkey? I really love this. It makes a lot of sense. I don't know that we had this read, but she says, the slicing of the meat is me giving pieces of myself to people, whether I want to or not. And as a native person, that's what you're doing every day, slicing off pieces of yourself. It's exhausting. Whether people choose to eat it is up to them. And you ate it. And Whitney says, that was so beautiful.
Ooh.
Not reading the thing like this is what Whitney does though, right? It's
that's
like
what she does,
you know. The last scene we're gonna see here is like the native statue, the indigenous statue being chucked in the garbage, And it's like, this is, yeah, Whitney does choose to consume it. She does choose to take all of this stuff that like other people put out into the world for her own, for her own gain and her own satisfaction.
Yeah, she's sort of like claiming Kara as her accessory here, in like very much in the way that like a colonizing people will do to people who are already there. And Whitney, like I think Emma Stone's performance is really good, you know, throughout this show, but in this scene, the way that she is still kind of putting on her like ingratiating, smiling face and saying that's beautiful and trying to have the appropriate reaction to show Kara that she gets it and that she appreciates the art. But also you can sort of slowly see her realizing like, oh, it's probably not a good thing that Kara is, you know, that Kara is talking about, like the Kara thinks that I'm taking, eating pieces of her. Yeah. And maybe this woman in fact hates me. It's kind of feels like the gears are slowly turning in Whitney's brain.
Well, see, the interesting thing I'm looking for at the end of the season is does Whitney, like the question for Whitney or not will be, is it worth it or not? Is it worth it to do these things in pursuit of basically money and fame? Mm-hmm. Will
no,
she?
No, it's for the environment, Grace. Yeah, for
the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have two episodes left where I do think it's sinking in. I think even, you know, basically one of the most memorable scenes to me is the art show. And it's when Kara's with some friends and Whitney goes up and she's like, oh my God. And Kara's like, was that too much? She's like, no. And then Kara turns to her actual friends and it's like all these people, like they're the perfect people to be here.
Yeah.
And you can see Whitney have this like, I think she always has known to a degree, but she like basically puts it in the back of her brain so that she can get Kara to sign, you know, two contracts to be like a consultant and for have her art in her house. Like that's what she wants. She wants her art in her house. She wants to have all of it. She wants to have Kara's friendship and admiration and also get to use her in the show. It's whether or not at some point Whitney will realize that these are contrasting things at the moment.
Right, right. I mean, and it's like, and it's the same way that Whitney treats Fernando, is like that she likes the idea of having this prop that can be in the show, that can be a sign of like, look at all the good that they're doing for the community, how they're helping this person. But if Fernando stops acting like a piece of turkey and starts acting like an autonomous human being who has his own feelings and concerns about the world, like he loses his usefulness to Whitney and Asher and can just become one of the victims in their wake. So I think that tracking the Kara and Whitney relationship in the last two episodes will be really interesting. And, you know, the camera then is going to fix on Kara after this couch scene, who's looking uncomfortable and watching Vivi, the wealthy host of the party, put his arm around the other artist. And it's like clear that she's not going to make this sale that was like important for her career. And I think it's Kara's character is so interesting because like as an artist and, you know, my sister is a visual artist and, there's a relationship that artists have to the type of people who actually have the wealth and influence to afford to buy art and make art important and give you a successful career. The patron class, you know, that is a lot of these people are going to be, you know, these defense contractors and these, you know, people who work in security and all and these, you know, completely like loathsome parasitic professions that are in a lot of ways the force in the world that a lot of art that has social commentary is probably trying to confront. And the fact that the artist has to like walk this line and be in this situation where their success depends on having these people approve of them can be, you know, it's a really, I think, a really difficult and challenging and emotionally wrenching type of position to be in, not dissimilar to the way the kind of statements that Kara is making about just being a Native person in general. So I really like that they've made Kara as much of a character as she is. I don't know if I expected this when we were first introduced to her, but not only is she a foil for Whitney, I think she also kind of represents an important theme of what the show is getting at.
Yeah, totally agree. One thing I'm wondering about, we have two episodes left, Amanda, and I was trying to just like sort of look at Benny Softee's, like, what has he written? What has he directed? Obviously, Uncut Gems. He's directed a bunch. He doesn't always write the movies he's directing. Uncut Gems, he did write.
And with his brother, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then with Nathan Fielder, I don't know that we have... Basically, I'm wondering, like, what type of ending do we think we're getting? Which is, are we getting, like, and I was thinking through the lens of, like, will Whitney do anything to, you know, try to reclaim, you know, is this a succession, like, people never change? Or or is there something in here where we'll feel a little differently? My thought is that, you know, I think that what Nathan Fielder and what Benny's, what they're so good at is, like, who people are inherently. And so my feeling is, like, going into the end that, like, this all sort of, like, crumbles for them. Although it could crumble, but they're totally fine.
Exactly. You know? That's exactly what I was just thinking, Grace. I was like, I feel like this show is a tragedy. And the question is this a tragedy for Whitney and Asher, or is this just a tragedy for everyone else? And they end up moving on completely scot-free.
That is my bet. I don't know that we have a ton of evidence. Like Nathan Fielder, I don't think you can look at Nathan for you. I think the rehearsal has some like reckoning with what with what happened, I think, in a way that I think is interesting to think about the show. But I think obviously Nathan creating the show is different than Asher and Whitney Siegel, the characters. Uncut Gems ends not super great for the main characters. So maybe. I don't know. I was thinking about, I don't know if we have enough evidence from either of these people to know exactly what type of ending we might be getting. But I would put money on that piece that like they are gonna turn out, they're gonna come out of this so fine. Maybe not together. Definitely not with an HGTV show. Maybe they do. Maybe the show is like a hit success, and that's the message of like they're ruining Espanola. But like,
yeah, or yeah, TV it, show. It could be. I mean, like this could end up being a show where the joke is on Asher and Whitney, because the same way like Asher and Whitney are parasites on Espanola, like Dougie is a parasite on Asher and Whitney, and I think that like this could end up being a really like hilarious, cringy reality show about this delusional couple that thinks that they're doing good and where they are the butt of the joke. And that show could be a huge hit and they could just be like, okay, well, this is what we do now because they've really been shallow in all of their lofty intentions all along and they pivot to that. But I think that what has to happen, and I think that the curse is the curse that Asher and Whitney have put on Espanola. And we see it with the Koshaka jeans. We're going to see it with Abshir and Nala's family. We're going to see it with the militia and Fernando. Like, I think it's like they're going to damage this town in a way that it might not be able to come back from. And because they're so self-involved and shallow, they're ultimately not going to care. Or maybe Asher is going to care and Whitney isn't. Like, I think that those are sort of the direction that I see things heading in the last couple episodes.
Yeah. It's very interesting. I really love this show.
I love this show too, Grace. And when I was watching this episode, which is like, this is one of the joys now, I like, there'll be a joke and I'll think like, oh, great. I bet Grace likes that joke.
Amazing. Yeah. I read out the plot often. I like to make sure I get like, this is a line I really like. I get to say it. So I feel like I put my thumb on the scale in terms of what type of jokes I like from the show.
I did notice when I was watching it that I don't like laugh out loud. There've been maybe a couple of times I've laughed watching this show, but I do have like the kind of, you know, voice in my head thinking that's very funny. Like that's funny experience that I have watching the show.
This was Rob Sessionino's kind of hot take about Ted Lasso. So he's always saying, this is not a laugh out loud funny show, but you go, oh, that's funny. That's kind of how I do feel when I'm watching the show. I'm like, oh, that's very good. That's yeah. how I react. Yeah.
Like, well done. Well done, ooh. Gentlemen. Yeah.
Good. All right. That's episode 8. Next week, we'll talk about the penultimate episode.
Wow.
Yeah. In the meantime, Amanda, where can people find you? What are you up to?
You can keep up with me on Twitter, where I am at Dr. Amanda R. That's D-R Amanda R. And taking a little bit of a holiday break, mostly just being very sick, as you might have been able to hear in my voice. But Ariel and I will be back in the new year with more of our 6 Feet Under rewatch starting season 2. Grace, you and I got together to talk about Succession, the year in review. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that yet, that was very fun. Check that out. I also had a brief appearance on the recent Renap episode, Multiverses, where I got to tell a little part of a holiday themed story. So that's really what I have going on at the moment. How about you, Grace?
Can I just say about the multiverse, my favorite comment I saw about that was like, leave it to Dr. Amanda to take the story in an unexpectedly dark turn. Like, fair enough. Watching a lot of The Curse. Ooh,
I know. That's my inspiration.
All right. So I'm talking Fargo with Mike Bloom and LaTonya Starks each week. That season's been tremendous. I think one of the best episodes of the entire run of the show this past week. Shannon, Gus, and I finished up our Crown coverage. You can check that out. Jess and I are doing full spoiler recaps. We recently did A Murder at the End of the World with LaTonya and Sarah Carradine. And then we'll be doing Rick and Morty season 7 with DM Philly, which is kind of fun. Aaron and I talking movies this week. We kind of did like a what have we missed? And then we revealed the top 10 movies as voted on by the listeners, and I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. We'll be back next week with episode 9 of The Curse. Until then, bye-bye.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.